You're listening to episode 25 of the College of Mythic Cartography podcast with me, Willem Larson, recorded on March 6, 2009. In this episode, I'm going to take things on what might appear to be an out-of-the-ordinary subject for the kind of podcast that I normally do at the College of Mythic Cartography, but believe me, I'm going to make it fit in. you'll see what I'm talking about, because for a long time now, I've believed that when it comes to games, whether they are improv theater games, those intuition games that I learned in the Viola Spolin tradition, or whether they're tracking games, as I learned through the Tom Brown Jr., John Young, wilderness awareness tracker tradition. And all these games, they have both a diagnostic function and a prescriptive function. So when you play one of these games, it will both say what you need. If for the facilitator, as they're watching you, they can see what you need. And also, they'll be giving you some of what you need. Right? So they'll point a direction and go next. And they'll also give you something that's going to be nourishing at that moment too. And when you're very skilled with these games, those things are always occurring in tandem. And I've certainly given a game to a group and had them play it and realized, oops, not a good match for where this group is. I got a diagnosis, but the prescription was off, and we need to back up. Now that's totally normal. Now the game I have in mind right now is the sensory tune-up that I've written about in the blog here. And I got this from that same tradition of the tracker school, and even more specifically, what really kickstarted me experimenting with this was the sense meditation from the Wilderness Awareness School's Kamana Naturalist Correspondence Program. And I've taken that core idea of hitting each sense and in an activity with a group, and drilling deeper into the capacity for that sense to interact with the world. You know, if you haven't read me, if you haven't read what I've written about this subject, essentially the sensory tune-up in my version of it is just going through all five senses in a row, you know, and focusing in on them one at a time. And then once you finish with one sense, you move on to the next and you stack them. So you're seeing everything, and you're seeing all the light, and you're seeing all the colors and the shadows. And while you're continuing to see that, you're also hearing all the sounds all around you, 360 degrees above and below, fast sounds and slow sounds, lack of sound and lots of sound. Right, and you keep going. Touch, smell, taste, all five senses. And each of these senses, you can really, as a facilitator, drill very deep down into them. Well, I'm going to drill deep down into seeing for this podcast. Because right now in my life, I'm experiencing something that is a little miraculous, but also is telling me just this is how the body works. For example, I have a friend who she chipped her tooth as a child, right, on one of her front teeth. And the tooth remineralized as she grew up. That little chipped edge grew back. I mean, that's like a lizard regrowing a tail. It's like, how does the body do these things? And why doesn't it always do it? Why do some people need to get caps? How did her teeth do that? Well, it clearly shows that there's a gap in our understanding of how teeth work and that teeth are far more alive than we think they are. It's the same goes with our eyeballs, that there's this cultural sense, consensus, this common sense that when eyes go bad, you wear glasses. And once you start wearing glasses, they'll just get worse and worse and worse. And we all know that, that medical professionals who prescribe glasses, optometrists, don't actually heal eyes. They collaborate with you to make your vision better and, or I'm sorry, make your vision worse and to give you crutches as it gets worse and worse. Now, the first time I realized that there's something fishy going on here was when I was young. My father was in the Merchant Marines, and he told me a story about when he was at sea and he lost his glasses over the side of the ship. Now, this is a guy who had a heavy prescription. He just lost his glasses right into the drink. There they went. And so he had 6 months of sailing where he didn't have glasses. And when he finally got back to his home port and was able to go to an eye doctor and get his prescription and get new glasses made, the strength of the old prescription nearly bowled him over. He had to get a totally new prescription that was far weaker than the one he used to have. Well, what on earth happened? What on earth happened? So fast forward a little while, now I'm in my teen years, and I run across a book called Perfect Eyesight Without Glasses by Dr. William H. Bates, this fellow who, I think it was back in the 40s or so, was a big believer and big practitioner of vision therapy and had all these techniques you would do, palming the eyes, sunning the eyes, swaying, all these curious little exercises to improve a vision. Now, during these years, of course, I'm starting in puberty, really, and more as the years pass, I end up needing glasses. As a child, I didn't need them, but my vision became more and more myopic as the years passed. And I was having a pretty rough time in public schooling, so the timing of it makes perfect sense. Moved from a small town to a big town, from small town Oregon, actually, to the big city and to an inner city middle school. And that was pretty much the shock of my life. I may be still recovering. I don't know. But lo and behold, I need glasses because I'll tell you, speaking honestly, I certainly didn't want to see this world. You know, there wasn't happy faces looking back at me. I didn't understand the culture. I didn't understand anything about it. And so I immersed myself in books for quite a few years, which sort of explains how I arrived at the place I am today. Half wild child and half voracious reader and thinker and philosopher. So over the years, I looked into William Bates' method, Dr. Bates' method, at what is called the Bates method, as a matter of fact. And I tried the exercises, and they just required too much discipline and commitment. Without somebody there holding my hand, I just wasn't going to do all these things, all the little exercises that he said were important. So fast forward some time, and I'm going to the tracker school, and I run across this other vision program on the internet. And this is in the early days of the internet. What, maybe it was 95 or 96, probably 1996. And there's this website and this product, Vision Freedom, by this guy who wanted to become a pilot but didn't have 20/20 vision and didn't want to be stuck the way he was, and so did his own research and found his own mentors and now had this program where you improve your vision. So I bought that. What, that cost me like $100. And I tried it. I talked a friend of mine into getting it too. He tried it. He actually had way more success than I did. My success was essentially negligible. I had no success. And he improved his vision, but in the end, he also sort of fell by the wayside. Now, fast forward even over the years, and I'm aware that the eyes can improve. I'm aware that glasses aren't the end all and be all. I spend much of my time not wearing glasses and go in binge periods of wearing them when I just can't handle not being able to see things that well. And I notice that in certain situations, I get what the author of the Vision Freedom Program, Brian Severson, called an autofocus, where when I'm exercising or when I'm biking, you know, maybe I'm in the gym or when I'm moving my body that, and I'm really sweating, that my vision will clear up a little bit for a moment. I'll blink and bam, it's clear. What happened? Well, that was such an outlier in the whole realm of my experience that I couldn't help but junk it. Which has really made me think a lot since about how I treat outliers, experiences which don't match the bulk of the rest of my experience. Many of these experiences were, these outliers were pointers to the path to where I wanted to go. And I just wouldn't recognize them as what they were. So fast forward even more, I started eating a paleo diet, a more healthy diet. I went to a doctor and a naturopathic doctor and started working on health issues that I'd had for a long time. A lot of stuff has been changing. And so what I'm about to tell you, which I guess would be the College of Mythic Cartography vision improvement method, it's really nested in the context of all these other things. The game and the system that, and the method that I'm going to tell you may only work for me because of what I've done to achieve self-clarity and to create a better life for myself in general. I mean, certainly not being able to see the world is a coping mechanism for having a terrible world that you don't want to see, right? So having said that, I want you to think about everything that I'm going to tell you about vision improvement as specifically applying to the vision portion of the sensory tune-up. None of this is actually for what you might think of as bad vision, right? This is for anybody with eyes can do these exercises, and it will tune up their vision, and they will see more, and they will see with more clarity, and they will enjoy seeing more. So this is really a sensory training game. But as I said before, diagnostic and prescriptive, right? So training is actually healing. And a game is both delivering a diagnosis and delivering a dose of healing. Also keep in mind that all this is in the context of what we've been talking about in the last few podcasts, that learning, healing, observing the world, it's no longer separate things anymore. Part of this learning revolution is to start building a language of learning, a language of healing. And that's what we're doing right here. So if the learning how to learn game is a pattern language, and a pattern language, of course, is a language for talking about life affirming activities and ways of interacting with the world that work really, really well for most people, then that's exactly what we're talking about right here. So this is going to be what I would call a sub-pattern to the sensory tune-up game. And the sensory tune-up game is, of course, played when you're learning animal tracking and learning to use your senses and working on that part of rewilding. So the core act of this vision tune-up is the autofocus. And Brian Severson talked about this in his little book. He's actually quite the quirky fellow. He had this little tiny book with this blue eyeball on the cover, and it said Vision Freedom. And all the text in the book was usually three things at once, but constantly varying. It was either italics, caps, bold, underlined, or it was all of those. it's really funny. Like he was a very emphatic fellow in print, and was definitely saving the world in his mind. So I send an appreciation to Brian Severson for shouting from the rooftops. That's always an activity that I can get behind. So the autofocus, though, is an effort of your eyes through no control or exertion on your part, is an effort of your eyes to focus. It's basically an unconscious, passive system that is going on when your eyes focus on something. They're in control. So you have to make the space for them to want to focus. Okay, this is going to be very Taoist, right? You are making space. Let's say you're in a carriage and you're being pulled by a very intelligent pair of horses. And what you've discovered after a lifetime of tugging on the reins and jerking on them is that you don't really get anywhere. These horses know you backwards and forwards, and they pretty much push you around. You know, you don't make any progress on your journeys. And so what you're finally having to surrender to is, even though it frustrates you that the horses won't do what you say, you'll get what you want if you let the horses do what they want. If, in fact, you drop the reins and you make space for the horses to look at you, know where you want to go, and then take you there. Because they're just that smart. Well, your eyes are these same kinds of horses. They will autofocus. They want to see clearly. They, in my experience, it seems like they have this own sense of the joy of the seeing clearly. They'll work on it. But they'll also rebel when you're pushing them, when you're squinting, when you're forcing them to look at one place and, oh, I just want to see what that says. It gets eyeballs pretty upset. So the autofocus is something you make space for through one other major activity, which is wide-angle vision, which is, of course, another huge piece of the sensory tune-up in the vision portion, right? Wide-angle vision is simply using your peripheral vision, seeing everything all the way to the left and all the way to the right as you're looking straight ahead and parking your eyesight on a point in front of you, and you're seeing all the way up and all the way down. I had this suspicion when I was reading about biofeedback machines that vision therapists would use, because believe it or not, there is a small amount of people who study vision therapy in medical school and use some of these methods. I never did them because they cost thousands of dollars, but I was certainly daydreamed about doing them a lot. And what I discovered was they would have these machines that would beep when your ciliary muscles were reacting or relaxing, which are the muscles that focus your eye, right? They're the muscles that are working your cornea, I believe. This is kind of amusing because I really don't know my eye anatomy much at all anymore. I used to when I was deep into the vision therapy thing. And now what I'm giving you is entirely phenomenological. It is, I've experienced these things and this is how I think of them. And I'm offering it to you as an example of how we build a language around this kind of thing. It's not the end all be all of a vision game. I'll tell you that there's an infinite progression here. So we're just taking this as a start. So you'll forgive some ignorance of eye anatomy on my part, I hope. So wide-angle vision balances the autofocus response by making space for your eyes to see. By using wide-angle vision, I believe it relaxes those muscles. It relaxes the center focus muscles and allows them to run free. And when they run free, they like to focus. It's just what they do. Now, stepping back even more, there are many, many little supporting things you can do to make this possible. For example, so when we play Where Are Your Keys? Now back to the idea of this as a game. Well, what one of the first things we do is we do something called setup. So setup means I'm going to create a space for what I want to happen. It's pretty cool. And for each learning activity, it's different. For Where Are Your Keys, it means pulling what's in your pockets out and putting it in front of you and sitting in a little circle. For the vision thing, for the vision tune-up, setup means that you're walking down the sidewalk or the street. Now, this is my version of this. I'm telling you exactly what works for me in my experience. And you're going to see if it works for you. Now, I've already told you, I already actually started the game by telling you the big picture of where we're going. And I'm going to add one more thing to that big picture. Now, I mentioned that eyes can see and eyes want to see, and that eyeglasses will cripple your vision to see and steadily make or your ability to see and steadily make your vision worse. So that's part of the big picture. The other part of the big picture is how we'll make progress doing this vision tune-up. It's important to know that you may not be able to actually perceive an autofocus, which is the fundamental core act that we're encouraging. It might be muscle building. It might be coordination. I don't know exactly what is going on in the eye when an autofocus occurs. And I, to be perfectly honest, neither have any of my optometrists because they just don't believe in it, right? So whatever is going on in the eye when an autofocus is triggered, I liken it to somebody picking up a weight to do strength training. We might actually not be building muscles in the eye, but it certainly feels like it. So if we use that as our metaphor, I think it'll help communicate the big picture of what we need to do. So when you first try and pick up a heavy weight and you strain against the weight, maybe you can't pick it up. All right, but that count, it's almost like you did isometric exercise. Just the ability of your muscles straining, even though you did not actually even pick the weight up from the floor, even a millimeter, that counts. That is often what happens in the beginning of the autofocus journey, is that you'll make space for them to focus on things by doing your wide-angle vision, but they won't focus. It won't feel like they're doing anything. Doesn't matter. As we progress, what will happen is you'll have long periods between extremely brief, less than a second movements of a partial clear up, not to 20/20, not just a little bit of clearing up. Then the amount of time that little bit of clearing up will increase and it'll happen more often. Then the amount that your eyes will clear up will increase. And then you'll have extremely rare moments where everything will totally clear up. This could actually be a couple of years down the road if you want a timeline. But of course, you know, in the spirit of Where Are Your Keys, maybe we're exploring how quickly we can make this happen. Because certainly for me, over the past few months, I'm having the snowball effect of my vision getting better and better and better until every single day it's improved, remarkably so. I'm laughing as I walk down the street and I'm calling my friends up and saying, you won't believe it. I'm seeing even better today, you know? And I mean, it's amazing stuff is going on. And that's why I'm telling you about what I'm doing. Now for you really canny folks, you notice that I'm also doing part of the pattern, which is teaching what I'm learning, which is one of the learning patterns, and where are your keys, of course, each one teach one. And so my eyes are essentially teaching me how to teach vision tune up. So all that I'm telling you is part of that big picture that, as time goes on, and it might be pretty frustrating, your eyes they're not going to be linear progress. It's going to be very chaotic, scattered, progress that is little blips that increase in amount and frequency, right? So be prepared for that kind of learning curve. Now, how do you make space for an autofocus? Well, one of the things that I do, which is the one thing that you do have control over when it comes to wanting your eyes to see a detail, is I focus on the smallest detail that I can see in my fuzzy vision. Maybe it's the edge of a building. Maybe it's a power line. Maybe it's a freckle on someone's face if they're really close. I try and see the thing that is the closest thing to being seeable, but still just out of clear vision. And sometimes I can dig pretty deep into that. I mean, I'll start out not very ambitious, and then sometimes I'll just look into a cloud of fuzz and blur, and I just look for a detail. Like, try and see that crook in those branches. Try and see where those two branches come together. Now, while you're doing this, of course, is when you're looking at the smallest detail, which is what this pattern is. Look at the smallest detail. While you're looking at the smallest detail, you're also doing wide-angle vision, right? So you're letting go and you're seeing everything left, right, above and below. And then you're looking at the smallest detail. Now, while you're doing both of those things, you're also doing something I learned at the tracker school, which is vary your vision. Your eyes don't like to be parked on one detail. They like to flit like little insects or ground rodents from one spot to the next. They like to dance over the image of something. So instead of looking just at that crook where the two branches meet, look a little bit up and look a little bit to the right and look for other little details in the neighborhood and go back and forth between them, and then go back out to wide angle vision, and then go back to looking at the smallest detail, dancing around. Don't stay with one smallest detail. Dance from one smallest detail to the other. So that's very your vision. Give it a chance is sort of a balancing thing to this. I've also noticed that if I'm really relaxed and I'm let my eyes dance around a subject for quite a long time without looking away, and maybe even I really try and see that one detail maybe a little longer than I normally would, my eyes will focus up. It's almost like I looked at the one spot long enough that they were able to finally zero in. But I think that's that requires you really to having in your bones this no more staring. Staring is the enemy. Staring and squinting are the anti-patterns to what we're doing. So stop staring and stop squinting and replace staring with varying your vision, wide-angle vision, and dancing over the details. Now, you're still looking at the smallest detail, and you're still giving it a chance once you acquire some skill at relaxing. But you know, when you stare, you're actually kind of looking at you're widening what the detail is you're looking at, and you're just sort of parking your eyes there. It's not a good habit. If you're going to stare, go ahead and do wide-angle vision and just let your eyes relax. So the other support pattern is move your body. I had all those spontaneous autofocus moments when I was exercising. So now I make sure that when I'm biking to stay really conscious of those moments and take advantage of them and work my eyes while I'm biking, while I'm walking, while I'm running, while I'm exercising. The most clearing up I've had is while exercising. So something's going on there. Now, here's the next pattern is sun, rain, outdoors, indoors. My eyes are able to see along a certain continuum. Their improvement is progressing in a certain pattern. I am able to see outdoors far better than I can see indoors right now. Much like I can see in the light far better than I can see in the dark. My night vision is not as good as my day vision. So when you work on your eyes, make it as easy as possible. Work on your eyes and tune up your vision when you're outdoors and it's sunny. Start in that place. And then the next best thing is to do it outside when it's overcast and rainy. And the next best thing is to do it in a really well-lit room. And the hardest thing is going to be to do it in a dark room. I mean, that's just going to be about as difficult as you could imagine. So you probably won't be getting any significant autofocuses in that situation. So make it easy on your eyes. Let those intelligent horses feel like they could do something successful. Like they could have a really good experience. So another pattern for this is sidewalk and streets. I've noticed that when I'm biking down the street or I'm walking down the sidewalk, that the fact that I can see very far and that there are interesting details between me and the horizon line, the whole street as it extends into the distance, that sometimes my eyes will autofocus along that street and suddenly I'll be seeing all the way to the end of the street that has been, you know, a blur for 99% of the time I've walked along it. So it's almost like that however far my eyes focus, they know there's more stuff even farther and even farther, and they just kind of follow it along. So a support pattern for encouraging your vision to really always go to the limits of how much it can autofocus is to walk along a sidewalk and street and always extend your vision down the sidewalk, even if it's blurry, even if you're like, what is that down there? Are those people? Are those trees? Is that a placard out on the side? I cannot see that. I do this all the time, as you can probably tell. You'd be surprised. I mean, I've literally gone to totally blurry to holy cow, I can see that person. I can see their grocery bag. I can read what the logo is on it. And I couldn't even see that they were even there a moment ago. I mean, this is quite a wild ride once you really start working it. Another thing we're going to do is instead of just saying stop squinting, we're going to replace squinting with something. Now, I heard this from another guy who wrote a little book on vision improvement, and I took it to heart. I used it, and it works. And it's something that he claimed Native Americans did. And I don't know how he heard about this or who told him that Native peoples everywhere do this, but he claimed that there were these Native Americans on the plains who would see very distant objects by using a trick. They would look over their bottom lashes. They would tilt their head back, and they would look over their bottom lashes. So it was almost like their lashes were doing the squinting for them. They wouldn't squint their eyes, because if you think about it, as you tilt your head back, the space between your upper lid and lower lid naturally is closing, right? It kind of turns your eyes into foreshortened snow goggles, you know. So, and I think that must be why the trick works, that it is kind of it's like squinting without using muscles to squint. And boy, have I gotten a lot of mileage out of look over your lashes and no more squinting, right? Let's just make that the same pattern. Look over your lashes, no more squinting. Do not squint anymore. That's whipping the horses and they don't like it. So you need to give up the reins, look over your lashes, no more squinting. All of these support patterns really are part of the overall learning pattern that is always make it easier. Make it as easy as possible. The easiest next step. So when I say setup for this vision tune-up, right now, in different contexts, it would work in different situations. If I was out in the woods, I might tell you something different. But for right now, I'm going to assume that you're in an urban area because that's where I'm stuck. And this is my context. So the setup for this game is going to be sidewalk and streets. This is a game you're going to play with yourself. So as you're on that sidewalk and streets, as you're moving down that, of course, you're moving your body, right? So maybe you're biking down that street. Maybe you're walking along the sidewalk. Maybe you're running, whatever. But you're moving your body. And this is taking advantage, of course, of sun, rain, outdoors, indoors, that you're outside and preferably on a sunny day. That's a good place to start. And spring is just around the corner. So pull that in. Now, the core act, the two core acts, really, of this vision tune-up is the autofocus and wide-angle vision. Now, even if you have 20/20 vision, this is a game for you. And I hope I've made that clear so far. But if not, let me accent that. This is a vision tune-up. This is not for people with bad vision. So don't be satisfied with 20/20 vision. I want you to be able to count the needles on that conifer tree at the far end of the street. Why not? You know, why not? So this is the irony of me having vision problems and struggling with a blurred vision at a distance. And I've been laughing about this recently as my vision improves, I'm realizing that how do I decide when my vision will stop improving? What are the limits of human vision? Certainly 20/20 isn't the human limits. So my eyes will keep improving because I'm playing this game that I enjoyed, to the point where I might end up getting the nickname Hawkeye when, you know, I've had glasses for, most of my life. Certainly my childhood was glasses free, but my entire adult and teen life, I've had glasses and struggled with wearing them and out in the woods, having them spattered in rain and dirt. And they've been a hassle for a very long time. This is a funny statement about identity and e-primitive here too, because I used to think of myself as a person with bad vision. And now, of course, I'm going to have to recalibrate thinking myself as a person who has this fixed identity, but also the whole bad vision thing, it just doesn't apply anymore. All right, so you're walking down the street. Let's say you've gone for a walk on a sunny day. You're making space for the core activity, which is the autofocus, which you will encourage your eyes to trigger by telling those horses who you've given up the reins to see the smallest detail. And in order to do this, you may look over your lashes. No more squinting, right? And while you're doing this, you'll be going back out to the other major core activity, which is wide-angle vision. You'll be constantly dancing with wide-angle vision. And you'll be stretching your ability to do wide-angle vision. So see the smallest detail. Vary your vision. Give it a chance. Move your body. Now, there's a couple other ones that were helpful in the beginning, but help more aren't so much helpful now. I don't see them making a big impact, but they might really work for you. One is the pump and blink, which Brian Severson encouraged, which is squinting your eyes, like shutting your eyes as hard as you can, shutting them really, really tight, and then opening them as wide, like shooting your eyebrows up really high. And it's almost like, I think there's like a yoga asana that is like lion face or something that this is similar to, but this is just your eyes. And he calls that the pump and blink. Okay. So that's important. If in the beginning, maybe you can give that a shot. I still do it every once in a while to see if it will really help, but it kind of does. It just doesn't seem Well, when you're walking around the street and you're making the lion face, if I have an excuse to not do it, I'm not going to do it. Maybe that's what why I stopped the pump and blink. The other pattern here is something I call cry me a river, where you really want to lubricate your eyes. They need to be just totally wet. Because I suspect, certainly for me, and so I wonder if for not the vast majority of other myopic people, that if their eyes are just simply dry and suffering, that they're just not blinking enough, not hydrating their eye surface enough. And I would notice that sometimes if I shut my eyes for a long time, they would begin to burn under the lids, almost as if the moisture under my eyelids was starting to seep in and make them hurt. If you know what that's like when you get like water into a wound that was felt fine as long as it was dry, but then when it gets wet, you're like, oh man, that hurts. That's exactly what it felt like. And I was like, geez, I'm drying the heck out of my eyes. So very important is to get your eyes tearing up. Now, this can go to the ridiculous point, like for me, where I just have like tears running down my cheeks, and I wonder if people think I'm walking around sobbing. I've asked a couple of friends, and they don't think so, but it certainly feels weird to have tears running down your cheeks. But that's how much you really need to get your eyes to start lubricating themselves, because that's going to make it easier for them to do an autofocus. That's one of those things where, you know, if you never let the horses drink, they're going to get pretty upset at you. So you've got to let the horses drink. You've got to give up the reins, right? You've got to make space for them, the incredibly intelligent horses that they are, to take you where you want to go. So you make it easier for them. You make it as easy as possible for them to do what they do naturally and well. So that really sums up the whole vision tune-up portion of the vision section of the sensory tune-up game. Now, there's other parts of the eyesight, the vision part of that sensory game. Of course, there's color and shadow. There's seeing negative space. There's all these wonderful things you can do that artists do when they train themselves to paint and draw. So this is just one subset. This is just tuning up the actual clarity of your vision. This isn't so much a perceptual thing. This is actually it's almost a anatomical thing where it's like you're just carrying around tension, you know, just carrying around tension. And so how do you let it go? How do you let your eyes then rebuild up the conditioning they need to be running around as wild horses and focusing on all the smallest details that they want to focus on? So I hope this has helped. And I hope you'll give it a shot. Remember setup, sidewalk and streets. Remember the Corax, the autofocus, and wide-angle vision. Remember all the ways of supporting those Corax, the pump and blink, cry me a river, see the smallest detail, vary your vision, give it a chance. Move your body. Sun, rain, outdoors, indoors. Remember, it's always easier when it's sunny outdoors. Look over your lashes. No more squinting. And just make it easier. Do whatever you need to make it easier. Now I'm going to talk about symptoms. What's going to happen is, if you're really doing this, you are going to have some whacked out symptoms. You're going to have itching eyes. You're going to have burning eyes. Sometimes you're going to feel like your eyes are so full of light, just light, that you just almost can't stand it. It's almost like light has always hit the back of your retina in such a diffuse way, and now it's hitting it like a laser, and it's with such clarity, and it's just killing you, right? This happens to me all the time. It's really kind of funny, but it always goes hand in hand with improvement, so I've just learned to embrace it. The other thing that'll happen is eye fatigue. You'll notice that sometimes when you play this little vision tune-up game, your eyes won't feel tired. And I think that's when they haven't really done any autofocusing. They don't actually have to clear anything up to do the autofocus, remember. They just have to try. Which, if they try, gives me a sense of fatigue and tiredness around my eye. And in my eye. Like my whole socket and my brow. And I'm just, and sometimes I'll just bend over. I'll be like, that's, I'm really working these eyes. So, it won't be without symptoms. You know, it won't be without a little bit of discomfort, but I think it's the good kind of discomfort. Just like when you're doing strength training or learning a new sport and you're pushing your body. That's exactly what this is. This is a conditioning game. So on the one hand, you've got a game to tune up your vision, to take it beyond 20/20 vision, if you have that. Right. And if you have less than 20/20 vision, to get it up to 20/20 and then beyond. Right. There's a long commitment to this, certainly. But if you want to have hawk eyes, this is a path that you can get there. I am so close to staking my reputation on it, but it's definitely still in the experimental stage. But with the miraculous improvements that's happened to me, that I'm really seeing this as the everyday sort of miracle that anybody can do. So good luck. And also think about how we've talked about this. I've started talking about this in the terms of the language of learning how to learn. What I'll be really interested in, and if anybody can send me an email or comment about how this has helped them or not, is whether or not how I talk about this has helped you to use it, right? This may be an exciting idea. I've got lots of exciting ideas. But are you able to just use this right away in your daily life? Did I make it clear enough, simple enough? Did I make it the next easiest step, another pattern, to improving your eyesight? Or is there steps missing? So you've been listening to the vision episode. Episode 25 of the College of Mythic Cartography podcast, recorded March 6th, 2009. Thanks for listening.